Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight on Mages, Sages, Healers, and Seers, I am proud to bring you Living Labyrinths with Athena Dugan. Greetings and welcome, Athena. How are you today?
Greetings. Thank you, Hercules. Glad to be here. Yeah, how are you?
Well, I'm looking forward to your show tonight, as I always do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have a great guest today, too. So we'll get started on that. And
I'll hand you the scepter and the show is yours. So.
Oh, great. Thank you. All right. Talk to you soon. So tonight our guest is a wonderful woman. They're all wonderful. She's great. She's the executive director and founder of Dream Catchers for the Soul Foundation, Incorporated. Her name is Pamela, known as Pema Reed. She's the executive director, like I said, of her company, Dream Catchers for the Soul Foundation. And she's a dedicated advocate for the holistic enrichment and education of children in at-risk communities. And Pema, she passionately believes in providing children age 5 to 18 with healthy coping tools. And as she is academically accomplished, she's a licensed minister, a seasoned group facilitator, and she's trained in mindfulness. And she's been inducted into the Brower Hall of Fame. This is a proclamation from Dade County, Florida. So Pema, she also received 2 Black Achievers Award nominations and a Brower Trailblazer Award. So welcome, Pema. I'm so glad that you could be here with us today.
Thanks for having me, Athena. Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Good, because I was, like, nervous. I'm like, oh, when I had asked you a while ago if you could, and it was kind of crazy because we were working on a project together. Actually, Pema and I are on the Veritas Council. We're council members with Veritas. So it was like when this was taking place, we were like in between of going to meetings and gathering our notes, and it was like that extra conversation. So thank you for being here tonight. This is exciting.
As I always say, all my friends, they say, Pam, you always say this, but I believe everything's in divine order and nothing happens before its time. It's all, you know, part of God's plan. And so, I'm glad to be here.
Oh, great. Thank you. Yeah, I totally agree. You have such an impressive resume, and I'm just really excited that you can be here because I like to just hear your ideas and how you get started with working with the children. But you're from New York, right?
Yes. Born and raised in New York. My parents, my mom is Jamaican and my father's Cuban. All of my brothers and sisters were born in Jamaica, and I was the only child that was born here in the U.S. So, yeah, I'm from New York. I went to School of the Arts. I studied as an actress, then went to film school.
Wow.
The story of my life.
That's a great journey, though. So this was all in Manhattan.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in the Bronx. And then
once
I finished with undergrad, I went to live in the city. And then I stayed in Harlem and Lenox Terrace until I moved to Florida to be with my mom. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah. You know, I'm surprised that I wonder if I ever ran into you in New York because I used to work in New York as a freelance stylist, and I was like all over the place and worked with a few actresses and blah, blah, blah. And it's interesting, though, that you...
I'm sure we probably crossed paths. I mean, I studied when I was about 8 or 9 with Grace Jones from the Double Image Theater. who became the head of, you know, the theater company that gave a lot of black actors awards. And so I used to hang around her when I was little until I was 13, and I said, Miss Jones, I want to have my own theater company. And she's like, what? I said,
what?
No, I want to have my own theater company for teenagers, you know, keep us off the street, and we can act, and we'll meet on Saturdays at your theater, and it'll be a great thing. And she just looked at me, and she said, okay, I'll let you do it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I was 13.
Now, you mean
when
the
I...
Grace?
No, not the singer, the Grace Jones. Grace Jones is a is an actress, was an actress, mm-hmm. was a director, and the founder of Double Image Theater in New York
See,
City.
Thank you for confirming that, because
yeah.
I used to have like little conversations with someone else. I'm like, they don't mean that Grace Jones. So I'm trying
no,
to imagine that personality.
But she was a legend, I tell you.
Yeah.
Like I said, she told me, you know, if you think you can do it, then do it. And I did it for a few years and wind up renting an off Broadway house at 13. And she's like, you're just going to get yourself in trouble, but go ahead, do whatever you want to do. And she just allowed me to be. So I'm grateful for her, you know, just encouraging me.
Wow. It's amazing. So let me ask you, so here you are, you're 13. So was it your age that inspired you to want to work with children, or is that, you know, because you're 13. It's like, how would you know to work with adults, or how did the inspiration come to stick with your passion of working with children? Is it because of, you know?
It's funny because it's like everything has come full circle in my life, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I always, as a child, thought about having a huge house filled with children, like hundreds and hundreds of children, right? That was like my dream as a kid. So I'm also in the process of opening up a foster home where I'll be actually able to do what I've envisioned as a child. So I don't know. I don't know how I got where I am, but I think everything's like coming full circle, because right now I'm in the process of starting. I just got a grant from the Children's Trust, and I'm going to be incorporating theater with mindfulness so that children can talk out their problems through theater. So I really don't know how to answer that. You know, like, I'm just listening to spirit. I'm getting these amazing downloads, and I just listen.
Oh, that is awesome. That's incredible. Because it's like you say, it's come full circle, spirit's talking to you, and these are the next steps. That's so exciting.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah. And I got to say this before I move forward. Grace mm-hmm. Jones was the president of the Adulco Awards. So if you've hung around a lot of theater people, especially a lot of black actors, they always mm-hmm. wanted to get that award. So she was the president before she made her transition.
Oh, wow, that's
with Vivian
great.
Robinson.
You know what?
Yeah.
I'm sure like when I used to do my styling, I used to work as a freelancer with, remember, Black Elegance magazine?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I used to hear, like, you know, a lot of people talking and stuff like that. And I know that's when I first heard my the Grace Jones comparisons. I'm like, oh, yeah. So that's incredible.
My sister was a model for a company in New York, and I remember Black Elegance, the name, because she used the model.
That was sweet. I bet you I met your sister.
Yeah, one of us, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
So, Pema, how did you build on your empire? Because this, what you're doing here, like now you're going to open a foster home. How did you take your program from the dream all the way up? I mean, how did you start working on the Broadway scene to get the theater school and then escalate? How did this all happen?
Growing up as a kid, like, I used to walk around with a briefcase, and all my friends, they still talk about it, right, from high school, because we're all close, you know. Everybody that attended Talent Unlimited, we're all still close. That all the ones that are here, we're tight. And they said, Pam, you used to walk around with a briefcase like you were a major director. And they used to make fun of me, but one of the things that my teacher said to me in high school is see the red dot, not the outer exterior. And so that's how I live my life, right? I look at where I want to go, and I stay focused. And it's been a challenge because a lot of people, when I first started Dreamcatchers, they were like, what? You want to do what? And I got a lot of negative feedback, you know. And I kept praying, you know, I kept praying to God. I was like, you gave me this idea. You know, you're the one who gave me this idea. I was perfectly fine living my life, and you downloaded this idea. And I fought with God for a long time because, I mean, like, when I went to seminary school, I didn't understand why I was going to seminary school, but God placed that on my heart, so I went. And I was like, God, I am never going to go in front of a church and preach. And now I understand, like, everything is coming full circle. I understand why I went to seminary school, because through this mindfulness, through everything that I'm doing, it goes back to source. It goes back to the person who downloaded the information in the first place. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does.
But I fought with God. Like, God, this is a great idea, but give it to somebody else. You know, give it to somebody who's smarter than me, who knows what they're doing. I know nothing about a nonprofit. I'm an executive recruiter. How do you want me to do this? You know, I kept fighting. I kept fighting and fighting and fighting. And then one day I just surrendered. And ever since I surrendered to the idea of Dreamcatchers for the Soul, everything has been running smoothly. It's like God said, okay, now that you said yes to this idea, I'm going to make it easier for you. Not that it's been a struggle, just the naysayers, but God has certainly made a way for me in terms of, you know, teaching these modalities to our children. So it's not just mindfulness, it's yoga, it's Tai Chi, it's Qigong, and we just graduated 4 teens who are level 1 Reiki healers, and I'm so excited about that because, you know, I'm planting seeds of kindness, compassion, of love, and, you know, when I leave this planet, I know that people will say she planted seeds, and I know that I did a good deed, you know?
Yes, that's excellent. Now, let me ask you something. I mean, so you gave into this plan, you surrendered so this can happen for you. Now, here it is. You're getting the children. And are they coming to you with challenges?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Wow.
I had a child 3 months ago that tried to commit suicide.
Oh, my gosh.
And there was a lot of that during the pandemic. It was like constant phone calls, you know, so-and-so tried to commit suicide. We had to Baker Act them. So-and-so wrote letters, and we think they're about to commit suicide, so they Baker Act them. Some killed themselves. So,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So you have a team of people.
I've been to foster homes of children whose parents were incarcerated, and there was this one little girl in particular. She had cut marks up and down her arm, and you know, I never leave a session without saying to our teens, tell yourself you love yourself, right? Tell yourself you love yourself. And I make them repeat it until they feel it in their heart, right? And so this little girl, she came up to me. She was about 15 or 16, and she said, can I give you a hug? And I said, sure. She said, thank you for telling me to tell myself I love myself. Both of my parents are incarcerated, so I never grew up with them. I've been in foster home after foster home after foster home. And then she showed me her arm, and she said, I've tried to kill myself so many times, but just because you said what you did, I promise you, I'll never do it again.
Oh my gosh.
She hugged me, and I never heard from her again, but I got to believe that God saved her.
Yeah. Wow. You made such a big difference in her life. I do pray as well that she's carrying on and keeping to her promise, if not to herself, just because
right.
She promised it to you. That's incredible. And you're, with all this, you have to have a lot of strength behind you working with these children, because they come at you in suicide. That is, to hear someone wants to unlive themselves with all this violence going on and everything, that's something serious. And is,
yeah.
How do you, and when you have these kids in a classroom and some of them aren't responding, or they're just being there, because how do they get there? Is it through a scholarship, or is it, how do you get your children to be a part of your program?
We started off with Broward County Parks. So
okay. These
teens are paid to be in the program. They're paid to work at the at the park, but they're also paid to be in the program. So that makes it nice. But at the same time, there were children that were there, there were teens that were there, that were just there because they were getting paid. And I told them, I'm like, if you're just here to get money, then that's okay. But you're going to sit here and some seed is going to be planted in you. And I saw the transformation, you know, like when we had a gala last year and my toughest teen, he was like half listening half the time. I invited them all to the gala, all 10 of them, and he said, is it all right if I got up and spoke to your, you know, the people that are attending your gala? And I started shaking. I'm like, I don't know. But no, I said, it's okay. Yeah, you can. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, what is this teen going to say? But he got up and he said, when Miss Pema came to the class with Miss Lucy, I thought they were crazy. I never heard of mindfulness. I didn't understand the importance of mindfulness. But from the 8-week program that we had to go, I understand the simple thing like taking a breath, because that could be the difference between me getting in a fight and me walking away.
Wow. But
yeah.
I'm just like in awe and flabbergasted to hear such a change that you're making in their lives. And is it an easy road, because your program, is it an intensive program? What is your program like? Just give me a rundown.
It's an eight-week program. So they come in and they learn about mindfulness, and then we do some drawings, right? And so we try to see where they're at, you know, in terms of their headspace. But when we start the class, we give out a survey. And it basically determines whether or not, how stressed out they are, what's their trigger points. And then we do, like I said, 8 of various different things, mindful eating. We do a dialogue with a symptom, like, if something's, you know, bothering them and they want to talk about it, they dialogue with whatever that its symptom is. Like if they have poor grades, like they dialogue with their grades. Like, you know, for example, one kid, one teen wrote, I don't understand why I'm getting F's. I mean, I'm pretty smart. So why do you keep appearing as F on my papers? And so he went back and forth, you know, with his symptom. And he found out that when he's taking tests, he just gets very nervous and he just spaces out. So with the breathing, he was able to, like, focus and settle down so he can take the test and get better grade. It wasn't that he didn't know what he was doing. He just freaked out every time he had to take a test.
Right. Wow. Yeah. So it's also, like, with this mindfulness, you incorporated labyrinth walking.
Yes. Walking meditation. As a matter of fact, we're going to, on World Labyrinth Day is coming up on May 4th, and we're going to expose three cohorts to the labyrinth. They've never been exposed to it. They don't even understand what it is, which is great. But we've been taking the labyrinth to summer camps in Homestead and, you know, different places and fairs, and just so that we can expose our little ones to the labyrinth. I think it's very important, especially inner city children.
Yes. Yes. Oh, well, this is great, because as I have an after-school labyrinth program,
right,
it took a while for the kids to warm up. So what I would do is just have them do a lot of coloring with the labyrinth and find, like, pictures of minotaurs and, like, things that related to the labyrinth. And then I actually did a labyrinth, made a tape labyrinth in the gymnasium, and I let them run around and have fun with it. Then I introduced music to it. And then the next week I did a maze and a labyrinth. And I told them, I said, choose which one you want to walk. It was fun. But
it's really exciting to see the little ones run around in the labyrinth. I don't know what age you handle, but the little ones, they just have so much fun, you know?
Yes.
Just running around it. And I don't stop them. I don't know if you do. But
I let them
wear themselves out and then come back.
Yep, exactly. I let them run around, and then when they're done, I said, well, how did that feel? I said, maybe you could write down one word on a piece of paper and just give it to me, and we'll include it in our little book. You know, so, yeah, it's funny, because when I started the program, I've never really worked with kids in such an intensive, I mean, I have worked with, like, teenagers, but not with the younger children. And these are grades three to, first to third grades. Now I'm going to be working with third, fourth, and fifth grade, so I'm really excited about that. But, you know, just allowing them to express themselves and just you know, just be in that moment, you know, being present.
Right.
Now is, you know, I incorporated the music a little bit just to get their attention to see how it can work as they walk the labyrinth, you know, and I've got them to walk the labyrinth, which is fun, you know, and then I make tape so they have fun pulling it up. They're like, can we pull up the labyrinth now?
Yeah.
I said, sure, if you want to take another walk, you know, before you take it up, feel free. So it's almost like fun. You know, it is actually
awesome.
It is fun. So,
that's awesome.
And I make them
bigger each time. Yeah, I've incorporated, like, sound bowls to the walking for children. They like that as well. Yeah.
Man, so I am loving your program. So when you started your program, how did you have to go back and, like, how many times did you have to go through the developed stages before you can actually get your program out there?
Well, we started off with meditation and yoga on the beach get people excited. But we had to stop because a lot of parents weren't bringing their children, you know. Mm-hmm. And we can't, you know, parents have to bring their children to an event for it to happen.
Right.
And one of the things that I was up against was that, you know, a lot of people of color thought that yoga was a sin. So that was a sin.
Wait, sin as in church sin?
Yes.
S-I-N? Really?
S-I-N. Yes.
What? That is, I've never heard that before. That's interesting.
Yes.
Wow. How did you change your mind?
I kept having, like, these events, the Children of the Lotus Retreat. It's an annual back-to-school retreat that I do, and I focus on different chakras each year, and this year we're concentrating on the solar plexus. But I started introducing them that way, like, come, you get free food, you get these great workshops, you get massages, you get Reiki healing, you get sound bowl healing, and you walk away and you're ready, you and your child, to go back to school. So I've been like a fisherman, you know, throwing them bait and wheeling them in.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at the beginning, it was very tough, especially with people of color.
That can be tough, too, because you're introducing a new modality that,
right,
maybe they think, oh, that's not for us.
It's woo-woo.
That's
got all the time. Ooh, that's woo-woo. But look at Oprah Winfrey, right?
Yeah, exactly.
They told her
exactly.
She was woo-woo, too. But.
Yeah. Well, we have a lot of our... No, I was about to say, we have a lot of our leaders, and, look at, what's his name? I can't think of his name. He's a big yoga guy, you know. He was married to Kimora Lee. That guy, you know, he started doing yoga, you know, and all those type of healing modalities. But these kids nowadays, I don't know if they go back that far. And it actually isn't that far. It was like a few years ago.
Well, no, because they're incorporating. Russell Simmons. They're incorporating mindfulness into basketball and football and soccer.
Yes.
Because
it's
mindfulness is not sitting in meditation. Mindfulness is being aware, right?
Yes.
So if you're aware of your circumstances and your surrounding and you use visualization to create what you want, it's a powerful tool. So a lot of athletes are using this to win games. They're seeing themselves successful.
Yeah. This is true.
And George Munson is one of the men who was responsible for getting the Miami Heat to do mindfulness. It's being incorporated now. And it's so funny because, again, when I started, people thought I was woo-woo, right? Then the pandemic happened, right? I've been around for 12 years. The pandemic happened, and people are starting to see, like, oh, this is really important.
Yes.
Silence is good for you. Walking the labyrinth is good for you.
Yeah.
Yoga is good for you. Tai Chi is good for you.
Yeah.
Now they're starting to see the importance of it. And I'm like, you know, God, you had a plan all along. You know, like, you knew what I was supposed to do right at the time that it was going to be necessary. And so it was necessary around the pandemic. We had Teams Open Space where teens can go online, turn their camera off, and just talk about different things that were, you know, that was hurting them or affecting them. And they would get to talk about it, and they get a little advice. But that came out of the pandemic, right? Teams Open Space. So a lot of things, I think of myself as sort of like an innovator in the sense that I listen to God. I listen to God and his plan, and I'm living it. I'm doing the best I can, you know, to, I say one child, to help one child. You know, my motto is, if I can light one candle, then that person will light another candle, and another person will light another candle, and before we know it, the whole world will be lit. And so that's what I'm trying to do, is light candles, millions and millions of candles, just by my one.
Yep, exactly. Oh, that's wonderful. And, you know, and going with that, that's what I say in my after-school program. If I can get one kid to like doing the labyrinth stuff, or two or three, however, I'm making a difference.
Absolutely.
And I knew I was when I was coming back from the school the other day. They were closed, and I didn't realize it was, because I work in the Catholic school system, and I didn't realize it was a public school holiday.
Right.
And they had no school, so I'm going there. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, where's everybody? Where's everybody? So I'm walking home, and a kid jumps out. She's like, hey, how you doing? And I'm like, oh, hey. She was from the Labyrinth program. So I'm like, this is amazing, because this kid, she was in and out. I didn't know if she was going to come one week or be there the next week, but she was there, and yeah, and I met her parents. I'm like, oh, hey, she's part of the after-school program. So it was great to see that, but just making that connection with kids, and that's what
and you
want to do.
And you never know the impact, right? You never know the impact.
Exactly.
I walk into Walmart, and there's a little kid, a little child who, you know, who runs up to me, you're the yogi lady. I'm like, I don't teach yoga. I teach mindfulness. But they know me from the Lotus as this woman who puts together this big event. So they, you're the yogi lady. Yeah, but you just really don't know the impact that you have, you know.
Yeah.
And what you're doing is amazing.
Yeah, thank you. So you're children of the Lotus, right? That's your program, part of your
Correct.
Program, or is it a program?
No, it's my program.
Okay.
Again, another download. And I didn't realize when I got the download what Lotus meant, right? So I wake up, and I knew I wanted to do a back-to-school event, and Spirit said, call it Children of the Lotus. And I'm like, Lotus. Yeah, Lotus. And I look up what Lotus means, and it's it's powerful, because it grows in the mud.
Yeah.
No matter what, it survives, and no matter what, our children will survive if we plant the right seeds in them. And, you know, I always say this, and I have to keep repeating it. It is not parents' job to dictate who their child should be. It is their job to raise them. Let them tell you who they're supposed to be.
Yes.
Watch them, watch them, watch them, watch them, watch them, and they will show you.
Yes.
My parents were the greatest, because I had a lemonade stand when I was 5 years old, and then I had, I started a franchise, right? So we lived in the Bronx, so I had one on each corner.
Wow.
And I had people working for me selling lemonade. And then as I grew older, I said, we can make ice pops. So I put the lemonade in a cup and put it in the freezer and made ice pops and sold those.
Wow, you were an innovator. You certainly were. Wow.
And then there was like this garden next door to our house. And I'm like, Ma, how am I going to turn that into a restaurant? I think we can make some hamburgers and hot dogs and sell them. And my mom said, baby, that's not our property. Well, that was the end of my restaurant. But, yeah. But they let me be. They let me be me.
Yeah.
And that was really important. I made lots of mistakes, but they really allowed me to be me.
Yeah. Wow. So through these mistakes, you were able to get back on your focus.
Yes. I attended Purchase, SUNY at Purchase. I was in the conservatory for acting. And it was a struggle. I mean, I was the only black person in my freshman company. Gina Belafonte was in the sophomore company, and Wesley Snipes was in the junior company. There was no one in the senior company. Mm-hmm. And it was very difficult because I didn't know I was black for long. I didn't know I was black till I went to college, right? So it was difficult for me because SUNY at Purchase is part of SUNY, right? But it's a conservatory. They have conservatories for acting and conservatory for dance. And it's a very it was at the time a very prestigious school to get into. I mean, they interviewed thousands and thousands of actors and actresses and dancers and singers all over the world. And so I got in, but I never felt like I belonged. You know, it was very difficult for me. I even tried to, like, use substance just to cope because it was very difficult. You put people in a conservatory with other students, you know, other black children, other white children, and then you have a conservatory which is 99.9% white. And then, you know, you tell them what they can or cannot do. Like, I had a professor that said to me, oh, you'll never do Shakespeare. You know, you're a black actress. You should stick to something more your color, like for colored girls. And I was appalled. I mean, all I wanted to do was to learn Shakespeare. As a matter of fact, the piece that I auditioned with was a Shakespearean piece, and I wanted to eventually go to Europe and study acting, you know, after my four years in college. But it was difficult. It was difficult, but I'm here. I'm here now, right? I'm here, and I'm about to do another project besides the foster home where, again, I'm incorporating theater with mindfulness. And I said that earlier, but I want to implement that. I want to just say that I'm coming full circle again with my acting and my theater and, you know, my children and teens. So I'm happy. Yeah.
And what's great about what your life experience is, you've faced a lot of adversity. And that's what's so important, too, I think, now in this day and age, especially with children of color, you can intelligently address they may have or that they may run into. You know, it's still a very important and strong issue that we face, you know, as people of color. It's become, what is it, an unconscious bias now, you know. So it's like, okay, let's address it for what it is.
Right. And like I said, I didn't know I was black, okay? Mm-hmm. So I came from school, you know, Talent Unlimited High School, which is similar to Performing and Arts High School, and we were just family, right? We didn't look at each other as black or white. We were family. Exactly. And my mom and dad, they raised us in terms of classism, not color. So my grandfather was a tailor in Jamaica, and he was a prestigious tailor. So it was about classism, not color. So going to college at 16 and being told I was black, I was like, who's black? You know?
Absolutely.
I was, like, confused. And it's not the fault of my parents. I just didn't know. And I've spoken to a couple of people who had similar experiences. So I know I'm not the only one, you know, who didn't know, but...
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, it's an everyday occurrence. But it's also, if your parents don't, you know, they're not telling you, oh, you're black because you can't do this because you're black or whatever. So then it's not an issue until you actually experience it.
Right.
Yeah.
And Wesley Snipes, he was like, Pam, don't let these people get to you. don't let them get to you, you know. And he really tried to help me, but he, you know, we in the conservatory, we had like acting every single day. We had fencing. We had speech. So we had so many different classes that only time I saw him was when I was, you know, going from one class to the next or during meals. So, but he was very helpful to me. Gina, on the other hand, she really wasn't black, being Harry Belafonte's daughter.
Right.
So she couldn't relate to what I was trying to tell her. And so the black children, again, they saw me as an Oreo. So that was actually the name of my first film, Oreo. And because that's, you know, that again, that's how I felt.
Yeah.
Like I was just I was black on the outside and white on the in, whatever that means. I'm not even sure what that means, but at the time, that's how I felt.
Yeah. Wow. That's really a great story. Do you ever share that with your students, or how in depth do you get with that with your students?
No, I haven't shared that part with my students.
Mm-hmm.
One thing happened. I couldn't remember this child's name, and I kept calling him Little Man.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the teens said to me, "His name is not Little Man. He has a name."
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, my God. I went home, and I cried. And I cried, and I was like, God, forgive me for calling him Little Man. And so I went back the following week, and I said, I'm so sorry for calling you Little Man. Your name is your nature, and how dare me not remember your name, and since I didn't remember your name, just call you Little Man. You know, and I told them how I felt at Purchase. Like, I was just, you know, just a raisin, you know, in a big bowl of milk. And and I apologized profusely, and I said, is it okay if I give you a hug? And he said, sure. And he gave me a hug, and he said, it's okay. I said, no, it's not okay. Let nobody call you out of your name. If they can't remember your name, they should say, what is your name again?
Yes.
Not Little Man, because that's not your name.
Right. Yeah. Wow. That's a strong experience, and I'm sure he'll walk away with that and let it be known and develop confidence, you know.
Yes.
Be able to
This was a child that wouldn't speak up for himself, you know, so...
Mm-hmm.
For me to call him Little Man, and he's a grown man, well, he's 17, but call him outside of his name was not right.
Yeah.
And it's really important that we understand as adults that children have feelings.
Yes.
Children, you know, we always heard growing up, you're supposed to be seen, not heard, but they're supposed to be heard too. You
exactly.
Know, what they have to say is important, too.
Yes, definitely. Yeah,
Not grown people's conversation, but what they have to say is important. And that's one of the things that I say in my class is that whatever you have to say, it's important. Don't dummy it down. Don't dye it down. Don't shrink for anybody. What you have to say is important.
Yes, exactly. So when you work with your children, you have them once a week for 8 weeks?
Once a week for 8 weeks for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. And what's the maximum students?
10. Only 10. Yeah. Because we try to create a safe space.
Yeah.
And anything more than 10 is not safe. Like a little girl said in one of the classes, I didn't teach this class because I'm backing away from teaching so that I can run the organization. One of the young teens said to the two teachers that were running the program recently, She says, I'm not going to share in this room anymore. And they were like, why? She said, because it's not a safe space. You said this is going to be a safe space, and what happens in this room stays in this room. And that's not the case, because one of the people in this class went and said something that I said while I was in the class. So the two instructors were flabbergasted. They were like, who did that? I'm not going to say who did that. So the girl who spoke about the girl said, I'm the one who did it. And she said, I'm sorry. I was just trying to, you know, make friends with somebody, so I said it, and I'm really sorry. I'm sorry that you don't trust this space anymore. But I was wrong.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow. And the children come with so much profound and focus, clarity.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, when I read that report, I was like, wow. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
She clearly gets it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and,
definitely.
And it made the other nine, well, the other eight students begin to take what we were giving them, what the two instructors were giving them, as powerful, as important. And so it changed. It changed the whole dynamic of the group.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, create a conscious shift.
Yes.
Just like, really made them think. Mm-hmm. And that's great. That's part of the point of your program, not only being mindful, but seeing what that mindfulness all about. It brings you, like you say, almost full circle. It's like, okay, if you didn't have that thought, you have that thought now. And it's like, you know, where's your focus? How are you going to, you know, it's all about relationships and how you relate with people in the world.
Right, right. And again, the pause, the practice of the pause.
Yes. Yes.
Just, you don't know what a person went through before they came to school. You don't know if they had to wake up their brother and sister, feed them, put clothes on them, and then take them to school and then run to their own school. You don't know what a person's gone through. So pause. Think about it before you react.
Yes.
That pause is just a wonderful tool, not only for young people, but for us as adults.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, and can I'm going to share something. Me working with these children doing this after-school program, it's had me see things so differently and activate that pause. And know that these children are all coming from different homes, different households. And when they come with these attitudes, I say, so how are you today? What's going on? You know, I only get an hour with them, and I have quite a few more. But I allow them to be in that space. If they want to be angry, fine, be angry. If they want to, you know, not do part of the program, I'm like, okay, I'm fine with that. But they have to stay in the room because it's an after-school program. So there was one kid that didn't, she's like, I hate this program. I really hate it. I'm like, okay, maybe you'll feel different another day, but that's okay if you hate it too. So, you know, so then the next week she was like 360. She was like, I love this program. And I don't know if it's because it was something different we were doing. Actually, I know. It was because we were doing something different. And I'm like, she wants to be more active in the program. So whenever I started doing something that involved more hands-on, I'm like, hey, why don't you help me with this? You know, so she was way into it. So I'm like, okay, so this is what she likes. You know, she likes to be more hands-on. And that's what I love. Everybody to experience their experience and participate, and I think that's really important. But going back to, you know, your program, you really get the kids involved, and it's, you're like
actually shaping their minds? And what happens after the program? Do they go to a next level, or do they come back? And what about when they graduate? What happens?
Well, this is the thing. I was talking to the one of the teachers the other day, and I said we have to do a check-in with them. But the 30 group of teens that we're working with right now, we're going to graduate 10 to be mindful ambassadors. So they're going to be going out teaching their peers mindfulness and senior citizens mindfulness.
Nice. Oh my goodness. You're connecting the web. This is amazing.
Yeah. Generational,
wow.
Right?
Yes. And your program, it's right now is just based in Florida.
Yes. It's funny because I just had a conversation with someone a couple of weeks ago, and they're like, when are you going to come to Georgia? When are you going to come to New York? When are you going to go? Where are you going to go to Tallahassee and Jacksonville? We can use you up here.
I want this program where I live. I mean, we can definitely use it. There's a lot of teen angst and violence, and it would be great to just get them into that space. Get your
You're
program
Philly, right?
Here in Philly. Yeah, I am.
Well, there's a program out of Baltimore.
Yeah.
There's a program out of Baltimore. You're not that far from Baltimore, right?
No, I'm not that far from Baltimore, but Philly is Philly.
okay.
If I could train up there, I'll train up there to bring it down here. Whatever. It's really important.
Work is very important, and I, when I open up the foster home, my goal is to make sure that all of the children are taught these modalities. That not only are they taught these modalities, but they're eating healthy. Because a lot of times I go into foster homes. They've got frozen waffles, frozen pancakes with syrup, and then they give them box juices. No sign of fruits, no signs of vegetables, canned spaghetti. And you're wondering why they're swinging from the chandeliers?
Yeah.
Give them good food. So my objective is to open 7 homes, but I got to get one first, right? So open one home where I have 7 children, and again, they're learning mindfulness, yoga, Tai Chi, Qigong every day. Maybe a different modality every other day.
Right.
It's embedded. So the people that are running the organization for me will have to study the mindfulness. They have to be mindful. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the person who I hire to cook for them has to be mindful. So no sugars,
Yes.
No sodas, no box foods, everything fresh. That's my goal. When I go in, I bring in bananas, I bring in grapes, I bring in oranges. And they're looking at me like, what is this? Like teenagers asking me, what is cantaloupe? So we've got to expose our babies to that, and
this is true,
and that's what I plan on doing, just exposing more children to these modalities, because it helps, and for me I know that it helps, because after my mom died, I wanted to die, and I went to Georgia on a spiritual retreat to kill myself. I went up, I saw my minister. I had no idea that she was going to be there. And I'm getting on the elevator, and she's like, what are you doing here? And I said, what are you doing here? She said, well, I'm here for the retreat. I said, I'm here for the retreat. She says, well, I'll see you later. And she gets off, and I said to myself, she's not going to see me later, because I'm going to go upstairs, and that's it. So that's when God said to me, I have something planned for you, but you're not ready. And with that voice of telling me I have something planned for you, mm-hmm. I decided to you know, stay here. But during that time, before I got to that place, I died. I physically died. They had to resuscitate me because my blood level went down to 4.
Oh.
And my platelets, I was just bleeding profusely, right? And after they brought me back, and I was in a coma for a few days, and I went to the light, saw the light, how beautiful it was, didn't want to come back. My minister, when I did come back, my minister, Reverend Lottie, she says, I want you to just envision yourself perfect, whole, and complete, and go into meditation and see that for yourself. See that. See what you want, not what you don't want.
Right.
And, yeah. Yeah, so
wow.
I'm not just here singing a dance. I know that this stuff works.
Yes.
I know that the Holy Spirit planted it in me, and it continues to download different ideas in me, and I'm open and receptive because
yes.
I am here for a divine purpose.
Yes. And you're speaking from strength and in adversity and bouncing back, and this is what life is made of, these
yeah.
challenges and how we face them. And we don't have to face them alone. And
right.
we have, you know, spirit. We have the higher being in our corner. He's walking with us always.
And I hate to interrupt us at this point, but we have 3 more minutes left.
Oh. Okay, Pema, this has been an intense conversation, and I thank you so much.
Yeah, I apologize. I went on a tangent, but I think it's important. I think
it's very important
to understand dream catchers, because
exactly.
it's not only about the children, it's about me.
Exactly, and your growth, you're able to bring that to the children, and that's
yes.
what's amazing. And how can people get in touch with you? Yes, you are a Logan.
Pam at DCFTS.org. That's Pam at Dog Charlie Frank Tom Sugar .org. Or my number is 954-558-0632. Once again, that's 954-558-0632. And my website is dreamcatchers.ngo. That's dreamcatchers.ngo.
Excellent. Thank you. And for those of you, Pam is also doing a World Labyrinth Day, as well as I am, but we're both in, she'll be in Florida doing hers, am I correct? And I'll be in Philadelphia
right.
during my
yeah.
World Labyrinth Day walk. So to find out more about that, you can AthenaDugan@gmail.com or walkersofthelabyrinth.com .org and find out more about that, or go to worldlabyrinthday.org and you can go and find out everywhere where there's going to be a World Labyrinth Day walk on May 4th, because just about every last World Labyrinth Day walk will be advertised on a site and you can find your location.
Right.
So, Pema, oh my gosh,
yeah.
thank you so much. We are going to be talking so much because your program, I want it to come to Philadelphia, and I will do what I need to do to make it happen. So
all
help
right.
me.
All
right.
Okay.
So
I'm here. I will help you. I want to thank you for having me. I really appreciate you having me.
Oh,
thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And this, if you haven't been live with us today, you can catch the recording within an hour and just check it out, Living Labyrinths. And thank you so much, Pema.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thank you, listeners.
Yes. Peace and blessings.
Yes. Do you want to give some parting words to our listeners?
If you're a teen or a child, keep your eye on the red dot, not the outer exterior. And always, always, always tell yourself, I love myself.
Thank you.
I love myself.
Thank you. And that's an excellent place to conclude the show. Thanks to both of you for an awesome experience.
Okay. Thank you, Hercules.
Thank you, Hercules.
Bye. Bye.